So for the last couple of weeks, I've been in the middle of a rather major remodeling project at my house. Been tearing out carpeting, and I had to remove part of a wood floor. And on that wood floor, the previous owners years ago had put down a delightful early 1970s yellow River Rock linoleum that if anybody would like me to bring to their house, I'd be more than happy to help with that. Apparently, that linoleum was not enough for them, because above that, they put down an additional pad and then a beautiful, dark 1980s brown linoleum. Just in case the yellow linoleum had not been enough, they got that extra layer in there. And apparently, as we were pulling out some of this, we're getting ready to put in new flooring ourselves. And I was talking with the guy that's going to do the work, and for the most part, we're leaving all the wood floors down, but in our entryway, where the brown linoleum was on top of the pad, was on top of the yellow linoleum, was on top of the wood, he said, you know, it'd probably just be easier to rip out the wood, the hardwood floors, and we'll just put a new piece of wood in here. And I said, okay, I can do that, right? I've talked before about the fact that I'm no good at building things, right? I can't construct anything, but I can tear stuff up. I know how to do that. Sometimes accidentally, sometimes on purpose, but I know how to break things. So I got to work trying to pull up these wood floors, and apparently the previous owners, when they had put down the pad for the second layer of linoleum, I think maybe they had gotten a new nail gun for Christmas. They placed the nail every 3 inches to hold the pad. I don't know what they expected to be walking on the pad that was going to move it that much, but because they used 2-inch nails for half-inch pad, I had these nails going through the wood floor as well. I was pulling up planks literally with 25 nails in them, trying to jerk them out of the floor. But luckily, as I said, I am good at tearing things up. So, I mean, you know, I got it, you know. But I'm to the point now. I've ripped out all the carpet. I've pulled out the baseboards. I've ripped up that piece of floor. And now we're to the next step. And I know for this part, I can't do the work. I'm just not skilled. I don't have gifts in building things. So I have a guy, I know a guy that we hired, and I know him because he dates my wife's cousin. That's how I first met Brandon. So we've been at family functions together. He's done some other small odd jobs for me before. He does a good job. He came over Friday to give me a hand hauling away all the junk I had pulled out, all the 2x4s and drywall, and I accidentally pulled down half of one ceiling, and it happens. It happens. That's what I told my wife. It happens. Stuff falls. So he came over to give me a hand. We hauled away a ton, literally, a ton of debris to the dump. And when we got done, he and I were walking through the house. He was making a list of items he's going to need because he begins work tomorrow on putting the new flooring in. So he's making a list of some of the things he knows he's going to need to have with him. He's going to be doing some drywall work for us as well. And as we walked through, I told him, I know that he works alone, so I said, hey, listen, if when you get to putting the flooring in, if you need somebody to help, I said, I'm happy to help. I don't know how to do it, but I can follow instructions. And he stood there, he's looking around at all this damage I've caused. He's looking at the ceiling where I've left this gaping hole because I pulled a 2x4 down that apparently was still attached. And he looks at me and says, nah, I'm okay. That's because he knows what good is. He knows what good looks like. Going through this project, my wife and I had gone to Home Depot to look at flooring, what type of flooring we want to put in. And as we were looking, we were talking with one of the employees there. We mentioned to them that the gentleman that we thought, Brandon, was going to be putting the stuff in. We mentioned what he had quoted as the bid, and the Home Depot employee said, you know, we can install it for half of that. And I was like, well, hey now, that's, I like Brandon, he's a nice guy, but half is half. I'm like, oh, okay. So we had Home Depot come in and do some measurements and give us a bid. And I talked with them when they were there. I told them all the stuff I was going to do and all the stuff we needed them to do. And they went, the next day I got a phone call from them with their bid. And now, miraculously, their bid was more than twice what Brandon's bid was. And I said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Just a few days ago, it was half. And they said, well, we found more stuff that we had to do. And I said, well, like what? We started going through the bid, and what I discovered was they'd nickeled and dimed me for a ton of stuff that I had specifically told them I would do or that I didn't need done. They were going to remove all my furniture, which I had already done. They wanted to rip up all the wood floors throughout my entire house. And I said, listen, I know exactly nothing about putting flooring in, but I know that I don't have to rip up all the wood floors in my house. They said, well, yes, we have to rip it up, and then we have to put an underlayment in. And I said, no, you don't. The product I got has an underlayment on it. And they said, well, we need to test for lead paint. I said, why? You're not pulling anything out. You're simply putting something in. At the end of the conversation, I hung up on them because I know what good looks like as well. So I called Brandon back and I apologized. I said, I'm sorry. I said, I was trying to get by with saving a buck and it was the wrong move. And when can you start? I'll be there Monday. Peter and the apostles are in Athens, Greece, in our scripture today. They're addressing crowds of people. Peter says, Athenians, I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through your city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Athens was a part of the Roman Empire, as was the rest of the world that the apostles knew. The Romans were a shrewd and calculating empire. They understood the difficulties in the age of horse and wagon, in the age of bow and arrow. They understood the limitations and difficulties of managing an empire that stretched from northern Africa to southern Great Britain, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Caspian Sea. One of the ways that they would use to maintain order in their empire, to draw in the most outermost areas, was that whenever they conquered a nation, one of the first things they would do is absorb that nation's gods into their own pantheon of gods. They would come in, and whatever religion you had, they were fine with. They would say, what is that? You have this god? Well, now this god is one of our gods. This was done to placate the people, to pacify them. Look, we aren't changing everything. You can still worship like you want, live your lives. You're just under new management now. And it worked wonders. It helped to keep order in a massive empire. But because of this, you would find temples in many of their cities to multiple gods. In Athens, there were temples to Greek gods and Roman gods and Syrian gods and Mesopotamian gods and Egyptian gods. And just to be safe, just to cover their bases in case they'd missed something, some god too small to notice, they would erect a temple to the unknown god, the god of just in case, the god of etc. See, the Romans were a pluralistic society. They recognized that there were many religions in the world. There was not one central religion. There were many. So just to be sure, they threw in this temple to make sure they got everybody. We live today in a pluralistic society as well. In our world, there are multiple religions. By some estimates, more than 4,000 different religions or belief systems exist today. In our own community, you can drive by Christian churches and Jewish temples and Muslim mosques and Buddhists and Sikhs and on. No longer is Christian the solitary religious presence of our society. And if we're being honest, it never was. So people today have multitudes of options and varieties to choose from. Being cognizant of that reality, Christians wonder, what's going to set us apart? What's going to make us look different? What is going to get us noticed? Unfortunately, what often gets us noticed is our bad behavior. When we are mean or heartless or cruel or hateful in the name of Jesus. Far too often in our world, what gets noticed first among Christians is the worst of us. The Fred Phelps, The Westboro Baptist churches of the world, far too often we end up being like the Home Depots of the world, where someone comes in expecting to find one thing and is greeted with something far different that they didn't expect, something they were not looking for. As disciples of Jesus Christ, we must strive against that image every day. We must strive against that legacy, because that is not the faith of Jesus Christ. That is not the faith of grace and love and compassion and justice and hope and peace. We must stand against the worst of ourselves with all we have that is good, because the world may not know which temple we come from, which religion we emanate from, which faith we emerge from, but they know what good looks like. In 1 Peter we hear, "Now who will harm you if you're eager to do what is good? But even if you do suffer for doing what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear what they fear, do not be intimidated, but in your hearts sanctify Christ as Lord. Always be ready to make your defense to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and reverence." Who will harm you if you are eager to do what is good? We go forth from this place every week with grace and hope and joy and love on our hearts. We go forth into the world to impart those things upon others. They may not know where we come from, but they know what good looks like. And if we keep doing that day after day after day, going forth to do that good, the day will come when they say, "Why is it that you have that hope in you? Why is it that you have that joy in you? From where do you get the strength to forgive someone?" And that is when, with that gentleness and that reverence, we can say, "It is from Jesus Christ that I get that." Who will harm you if you are eager to do good? What are we supposed to do in a world that seems to ignore our faith more than pursue it? What are we supposed to do in a world that no longer automatically comes to church because it's socially and culturally expected? What are we supposed to do in a pluralistic society where, with thousands of choices for faith, the fastest rising segment is none? We are supposed to do good. My mother-in-law used to work for the Salvation Army. And their motto is, "Do some good today." The idea being that today might be hard, and it might be difficult, there might be struggles, there might be setbacks, but if at the end of the day you can look back and say, "You know what? We did some good today," then it is a good day. And with that philosophy, with that image upon their hearts as they go forth, the world knows who they are. Not everyone knows that they're a church. They are. They're having worship services this morning, same as us. Not everyone knows that they're a faith-based organization. But at Christmas time, when we see those red kettles outside of the department store, or outside of the mall, or outside of the grocery store, and we stop for a moment to dig into our pockets and find some spare change, we do it because we know that they're going to do some good with it. People who have never darkened the doorstep of a church, who have never considered faith of any kind, will stop and put money in those buckets because they know they're going to do some good. We are supposed to do good, to love our neighbor as ourselves, to forgive others as we are forgiven, to be a servant of all, to love our God with all our heart and our spirit and our mind. We are supposed to do good. We do good. when we gather boxes of food to deliver to 39 children throughout the summer, because we recognize that the program that was helping those children shut down, and we said, that's not okay, we do good. When we pack up bags of food every week during the school year and haul them over to the school so they can be handed out to kids on the free or reduced lunch program, even though we will never see those kids or never know those kids' names and probably never see their families, we do good. When we go to Olathe to prepare a meal for the Johnson County Food Ministry and we serve 200 hungry people who have come in off the street and are just looking for a hot meal, and we take their empty plate and say, hey, do you want another one? We do good. We are supposed to do good. Because the world may not know what faith we hold. They may not know if we're one of those crazy Christians or not. They may not know what church we come from. They may not know which temple. To them, we may just be the people from the temple of the unknown God, or of no God whatsoever. But trust me, believe me, hear me when I say, they know